Today on Straight Talk Africa, we have two West African heads of state and Dr. Darius Mans, the president of Africare, Liberian president Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, and Sierra Leonean president Ernest Bai Koroma ask for a sort of Marshall Plan to help their economies recover from the Ebola epidemic. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to a special edition of Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, April 22nd. I am Shaka Sali. My colleague and social media reporter, Maria Majaro, is off today. And I should remind you that we'll not be taking telephone calls today. Today, we'll examine the recent visit by three African leaders to Washington at the invitation of U.S. President Barack Obama. I had the honor to sit down and discuss with the two West African heads of state on the progress made in their countries in the fight against Ebola and more. But first, after killing more than 10,000 people in West Africa, the worst of the epidemic appears to be under control. As part of early recovery efforts, the United States, the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and the African Union, as well as other international agencies, continued support the three nations most affected by the virus. My colleague, Paul Ndiho, has more on the story.
Welcome, Presidents Sirleaf.
The United States government is pledging more assistance to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone as they recover from the devastating Ebola epidemic. The U.S. pledge came last week when U.S. President Barack Obama hosted the leaders of the three African nations at the White House.
I'm going to be looking forward to hearing from them how the United States can stand shoulder to shoulder with them to work hard to take this crisis and turn it into an opportunity to rebuild even stronger than before.
Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was part of the delegation visiting the White House to discuss the fight against Ebola and the progress made in her country and the two other hardest hit by the disease.
We go back home carrying the message from them that, first of all, their own effort to contain the virus is appreciated, that our own leadership in joining them in this effort was applauded, and that we can count on the international community to be with us as we move, first of all, from containing the virus by getting to zero, ensuring that we build resilient health systems, and that we can now start the process of economic recovery.
The World Bank also offered another $650 million to help the devastated countries recover. This new pledge brings the organization's total financing for Ebola response and recovery efforts to $1.62 billion.
The world must not let up on efforts to get to zero Ebola cases in all three countries. For as long as one case of this deadly virus remains, the countries, region, and the world will remain at risk.
Although the economies of the three West African nations remain in bad shape, the African presidents thanked the international organizations, including the UN, World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and other nations for sending millions of dollars and thousands of people to help fight Ebola. However, Sierra Leone's President Ernest Bai Koroma says there is still work to be done.
The road to zero could be bumpy, and it has always been bumpy. So we urge that we remain coordinated in our drawdown plans.
Analysts say before the Ebola virus struck the region, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone had some of the highest economic growth rates in Africa. But the crisis closed markets, crippled trade, and forced schools and workplaces to close. As thousands of victims recover from the disease, the leaders of the three nations are moving forward with plans to rebuild their economies and their countries. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
And thanks, Paul, for that report. President Ernest Bai Koroma of Sierra Leone was one of the leaders who was invited to the White House meeting. Well, this is a special edition of Straight Talk Africa with Sierra Leonean President Ernest Bai Koroma. You had an opportunity to meet with President Barack Obama. What did you talk about?
He invited us to provide reassurances to us that he was very pleased that he initiated a process to support us in the fight against Ebola. Mm-hmm. And he was very happy that America participate in a manner in which they participated. Mm-hmm. And his thrust was to assure us that he is still with us, committed to continue the fight until all of us get to zero and get out of Ebola. And he is also prepared to provide support to us in our recovery programs and our post-Ebola economic development proposals.
Talking about economic proposals, can you talk to us about how Ebola has been able, for example, to impact on things to do with trade, business, and even things to do with tourism, for example?
For my country, Sierra Leone, as a result of the Ebola, most businesses shut down. A good number of the mining companies ceased operations. Flights were canceled to the country. Tourism was almost brought to a standstill. And even within the country, businesses that we are operating scaled down substantially.
We talk about here from the United States, help from the European Union or European countries and what have you. What about Africa? Can you talk to us a little bit about Africa's response?
Well, I must say that we also received response from our African brothers and sisters. The AU responded and provided support to doctors and other health officers that are still out there working and helping in the treatment centers, the laboratories. South Africa provided a laboratory. Mm-hmm. Nigeria and other African countries provided health officers. So I must say that they responded not only to Sierra Leone, but to all of the countries that are affected. And funds were also provided through the AU and other sister countries. So, yes, there was some response that came from our African brothers and sisters, which was appreciated.
What about the role played by the African Development Bank?
The African Development Bank played a very important role. In the first place, it was the president of the African Development Bank that first visited when a good number of other high-ranking officials were shying away to visit. He provided that leadership, and following his visit, a good number of other heads of other institutions and organizations dared to visit. And it's not only the visit, but they provided a lot of budgetary support and other financial support to support programs and other services that were offered by institutions who could not fund the services that they provided.
What about the healthcare system? What lessons have you learned out of this situation so far so that you can improve the healthcare situation in your country and indeed really around the region and the continent for that matter?
When Ebola struck, because of the unique nature
of Ebola, and because of the fear people had not to expose themselves to equally sick people, a good number stopped seeking medical attention from the hospitals and clinics. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the lessons we have learned, which we trying to quickly implement, is the establishment of disease control centers in our countries. I believe with the establishment of centers of excellence of disease control, we'll be able to fight back whenever we have a future outbreak. And it will also help us to strengthen the training of our health officers and maybe put in place structures that will clearly define protocols and processes in the existing health systems.
What about the issue of terrorism? Of course, you do have Boko Haram not very far from you, and of course, within the context of ECOWAS. Are people afraid of terrorism in Sierra Leone, especially given that it's not very far really removed from them?
Well, to the extent that anything happening within ECOWAS is a concern to all of us, particularly when the country we consider as the big brother in ECOWAS is being affected, we feel very concerned about it. And we believe that as a sub-regional organization, we must continue to pay attention. We are happy that now we are getting to the point of adopting a regional effort in the fight against Boko Haram. Mm-hmm. Out of Boko Haram, we also have received threats here and there from the group in Somalia.
Shabab, because of course you did have a contingent in Somalia.
We did, but our people are now back home. We are watching the situation closely, mm-hmm. and we are working with our international friends and partners to ensure that we put ourselves in a state of preparedness.
What do you think, Mr. President, really are the fundamental root causes of what we call terrorism? Because I'm sure you know as well as I do that there is a saying that one man's terrorist could very well be another man's freedom fighter.
You see, it's a difficult situation, a difficult issue to clearly define. Because at the end of the day, when you do your research, you can hardly find any justification for some of the actions. We went through a similar situation over the years when a group of people formed themselves into a rebel force and pretending that they are coming to liberate people. At the end of the day, they ended up causing more harm and mayhem to the people they are professing to liberate, the people they give the impression that they are fighting for. So you get confused when people just take up arms and either in the name of religion or in the name of liberating people or in the name of fighting for independence of a section or a group, and they end up doing things that you really see no justification for their actions.
When you talk about those sort of people in your country, you must be obviously talking about the RUF under Lance Corporal Fode Sanko,
yes.
And General Sam Bokari, General Mosquito. Very interesting. What about, for example, in the 1980s during the Reagan administration, he used to say that the ANC, for example, was a terrorist organization, that the Madiba himself Nelson Mandela was a terrorist.
Well, I believe that it was a slightly different situation, because out there then you had apartheid, which the world rejected because they imposed sanctions against it. There was a lot of international outcry condemning it.
Right.
You had people out there who believed that they were being oppressed, who constitute the majority of the people, whom have been more or less taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not asking for the whites to leave. They were asking for equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there was both pressure in and out, it gives some amount of justification to their efforts.
I hear you. Last question, Mr. President. I know time is not our best ally, but I do have some pressure here. Why did you fire your vice president?
Well, the party took a position that is taken out after investigations of certain allegations and which the party was convinced about. And I took a position on the issue based on the authority given to me by the Constitution. But because the matter is now before our courts, I will not want to comment beyond this point.
I see.
Because the matter is now before the Supreme Court, and I don't want to prejudge the outcome.
Does it in some ways remind you about a case in Malawi where the late now Dr. Binga Mutharika actually had his vice president, Joyce Banda, sacked from the party, but couldn't sack her from the vice presidency?
The Malawian situation is different. The provisions of our constitutions are different.
It is very interesting because even the Sierra Leone Bar Association happens to be split on whether or not, in fact, your move was constitutional or unconstitutional.
That is for the courts to decide.
On that note, Mr. President, it was a pleasure having you on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, sir.
That was Sierra Leonean President Ernest Bai Koroma, who talked with us about the purpose of his trip to the nation's capital. Now we'll pause for a short break, but would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA West Africa Leaders. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
Sia Niama Koroma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Niama Koroma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
Welcome back. We now move to my exclusive interview with Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Dr. Darius Mans, the President of Africare. I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you, Madam President, for the first time face to face, because I have previously conducted some interviews with you via telephone link up. So it's really a very, very unique pleasure for me. And you're most welcome to Washington. And of course, Dr. Darius Mans, it's equally a pleasure to meet you again. And I look forward, of course, to meeting you later this evening. My first question to you, Madam President, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, what is the purpose of your trip to Washington this time around?
President Obama invited the leaders of the three countries affected by Ebola, Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, to have a meeting with him, to share some of the experiences we have had, to recognize some of the progress we have made, and to reassure us that the United States will continue to be with us until we totally contain this virus and we embark upon our economic recovery programs.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are people, of course, who say that, yes, you can talk the talk, but sometimes you really have to walk the talk. Was there anything concrete that you agreed upon that the United States president pledged to do for the three affected countries in West Africa?
Well, you know, the Congress had already appropriated a certain amount to fight Ebola. And out of that, there was $1.4 billion that's supposed to be allocated to the three countries. Now, of course, as you know, that allocation we don't have all the details on, and a lot of it go to U.S. institutions that have been involved in working with us to fight the disease. Mm-hmm. Well, we made more progress, you know, than had been anticipated when these estimates were made. And what I take it as something concrete is that President Obama said, well, we recognize the progress. What we'd like to do now is to see how some of that allocation, you know, that may not be used can now be shifted to support your economic recovery program. Now, I don't know the details of, you know, the role of Congress and all of that in these allocations, but I took his commitment as very positive and, you know, and very concrete.
So would it be fair then to say that the meeting really met your expectations?
The meeting met our expectations. He was very firm in his statement of support. If I may just use a phrase he used, he said, I would like for the United States to make your three countries successful coming out of this dreadful disease. And I think that's a strong statement.
I see. Well, you also had meetings with the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. And I gather that you had requested for anywhere between $5 to $6 billion. How did that meeting go? Because reports suggest that the World Bank actually has agreed to offer $650 million.
Well, let's put this in context. We said we'd like to see what we call a Marshall Plan. A Marshall Plan meaning a pooling of international resources toward the objective of helping the three countries on their economic recovery road. Mm-hmm. Our rough back-of-the-envelope estimate came to about $8.8 billion, $4 billion of which is original program, and the other four are attributed to the three countries' national development program. We knew that this is an indicative program. We also knew that we already have, all three of us, national programs for which commitments and pledges have already been made for different types of programs that are very consistent with the overall program that we had formulated. And so we're looking at taking some of the existing commitments that come from not just the World Bank Group, but our European partners, our other multilateral partners, African Development Bank, International Monetary Fund, the whole range of supports. Taking that and then looking for additionality that will take us to this amount. So when the World Bank said $650 million, that is additionality because the bank had already made commitments to each of us in this fight for some of our program and to each of us in our own development, national development programs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, it takes a while to take all of these big numbers and, you know, unbundle them and put them in a different thing. But we think what was more important is that the response to our call was positive. And everyone said these countries deserve the help, not only because we've been through this, but because we have to prepare our health systems to have the resistance and the capacity to respond to this, because this is not a West Africa threat. It's a global threat, and you know what happened in this process. And so we like that positive response, and I think the Washington Post today said it well when they said the three countries deserve this support.
You deserve a sort of Marshall Plan, in other words.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. You know, we have a long partnership with all of the institutions in that room. We all had made a lot of progress and were really growing very well. All three putting our natural resources to work. And the Ebola is something we did not invite. We did not know. And so the fact that it undermine our economic progress, tell us that, and the fact that we went to work and avoided it becoming a global catastrophe, you know, through our strong efforts. And so we think the world coming to us enables our three countries that are naturally well endowed to be strong again, to preserve peace and stability in the region, and to make our own contribution to global peace and development.
You mentioned healthcare, the healthcare situation, the healthcare system. Talk to us about service delivery in your country. Talk to us about education, because only recently schools were reopened. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you give us a very brief report card on that?
Well, first of all, our healthcare system was exposed in terms of its fragility as a result of this disease. And it just told us that we did not have enough of the capability in terms of trained doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals. We did not have healthcare facilities that were up to date. And so we didn't have the systems of infection control that would have minimized the spread of this disease. And so one of the lessons learned from this is that we've got to build those healthcare systems that have the capacity to respond effectively to infection. And this is why we're working with U.S. institutions such as the Center for Disease Control, the National Institute of Health, and others in the UK and others that are helping to build those systems. It will take a lot of training because the patient-to-doctor ratio in all of our countries are woefully small. We just don't have the doctors. We don't have the nurses. Our education system also has a lot to be desired. Bear in mind, in the case of Liberia, we had a generation because of our civil conflict, that did not have the opportunity to go to school. And so our teachers and all left the country.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those who were teaching in the schools were volunteers who did not have the qualification. The training of teachers is not a quick fix. It takes years to train. And so the educational system is quite weak. Our plan, again, is to get the support to reinforce that system by being able to recruit, you know, support from other African countries, you know, that have a surplus or that, you know, as we did in the case of Ebola, where many of the African doctors and health professionals rarely came and joined us.
I saw some from my country, Uganda.
Absolutely. Oh, there's a wonderful Uganda woman doctor. Who really performs so well. No, so we hope that we'll be able to attract some teachers to strengthen our system, and our economic recovery plan has education as one of the key target sectors, simply because you got to be able to, if you have the health system and you have other things, but you don't have trained people who are able to deliver, to understand and to deliver it, then you still have trouble. So,
you are tuned into this special edition of Straight Talk Africa. When we return, we'll bring you more of our exclusive interview with the Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and AfriCare President Dr. Darius Mearns. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique. And this gives me that, inspiration to come to work.
President Obama recently delivered a statement to West Africans in support of the international fight against Ebola.
On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. If you feel sick with a high fever, you should get help right away. Because with prompt treatment in a medical center, nearly half of patients can recover. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. You are not alone. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives, and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work, and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
Welcome back. We continue with more of our exclusive interview with the Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and the President of AfriCare, Dr. Darius Mearns.
Let's talk to Dr. Darius Mearns, the president of AfriCare. You've done some work with Liberia. Can you update us on that?
AfriCare has been working in Liberia since 1992. Since 1992 and uninterrupted throughout. We have been there for the long haul, and we are committed to Liberia for the very long term. I participated in discussions yesterday with the international community around the recovery plans for Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. And I heard something very important from the international community, that the plan Liberia has is a very solid plan, that it is a plan that has been vetted by them all, and they recognize the impact that plan will have in positioning Liberia's healthcare system, its economic recovery for the future. AfriCare's role when Ebola hit was to strengthen the healthcare system at the community level. That's what we have been doing since 1992. So our immediate focus was on containment, supporting frontline community health workers, supporting safe burials, behavior change, messaging around how you contract the Ebola virus. At the same time, we focused on keeping hospital and health clinics open to be sure that people were getting the care they needed for non-Ebola related diseases. As we look ahead to the future, in every area that's in Liberia's plan, Africare intends to play its part.
Mm-hmm. Are there any specific issues or problems that you have encountered in the process? And if so, how have you or were you able to overcome them?
Well, I will tell you, thanks to the very strong leadership of the government of Liberia, we were able to become a part of the National Ebola Task Force and addressing issues as they arose around logistics. So we went out and mobilized private funding to provide equipment, personal protection equipment, infection prevention and control equipment and materials to frontline health workers across Liberia. We supported more than 100 health facilities across the country because we recognized this was a problem that we were encountering along the way, making sure people on the front line had what they needed to be able to respond.
Very interesting. Let me come back to you, President Salif. If you could put your fingers on something, can you tell us, for example, what you would consider to be the single most important decision that you were able to make during the Ebola crisis?
To empower the communities to take ownership, to take responsibility to fight the virus. I think that was the most important decision, and it brought the best results.
What about what you would consider to be the single most regrettable decision?
I had to go contrary to long-established culture and tradition by ordering cremation. A difficult decision because, like I say, it runs contrary to anything our country has ever done. It's not part of our nature. But in the end, in retrospect, I'm glad I did because it made a big difference at a time when we had hundreds of people dying on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And they could not be touched because the disease was spread. And so, but it was a hard decision.
You happen to be the first democratically elected female president in Africa. Has that come with any specific challenges that you have been able to face simply because you happen to be a female president?
The challenge to succeed. By being the first, I raised the expectations, you know, and the aspirations of women in Africa, of young African girls and boys and women all over the world. And so the challenge to succeed is strong, and I hope that I will meet that challenge and that they will see the period in which I serve as one that's made a big difference in the lives of Liberians.
You have accomplished a lot of things, President Salif. Do you have any particular individual that you look at as being your hero, your role model, someone that gave you her shoulders or his shoulders to climb on in order for you to see a little bit further?
I guess my two heroes, have passed on. But certainly Julius Nyerere and Nelson Mandela, for so many reasons, are two people that that motivate and inspire me and thousands of Africans and people all over the world.
It's interesting that you mention the Madiba as one of your heroes, and of course, Samuel Julius Nyerere. You know as well as I do what is taking place right now in South Africa, xenophobia, the plight of Africans who happen to work or earn a living in South Africa. What do you think Nelson Mandela or Julius Nyerere, who worked very hard to help end apartheid and colonialism in South Africa?
Well, I think it's sad, and certainly the kind of unity that was preached and practiced by President Hariri and President Mandela. But I must say that President Zuma and the government of South Africa are also responding appropriately to this, because they too have taken the decision and have conveyed to their people that this is wrong, that Africans are, you know, Africans, and that we need to control our emotions. Sometimes if we feel that others are getting benefits to which we're entitled. And I think that message from President Zuma and the South African government is strong and responsive and appropriate.
You know, of course, that you also have problems with African migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean, going to Europe. This happens almost every week, every month. Is there something that can be done at your level, the heads of state level, members of the African Union? Is there something, frankly, that you can do so as to help solve some of these problems? Because there must be forces that push and forces that pull.
I tell you, the one response we can do is have a stronger appeal to our partnership countries to do more for fighting poverty in our countries. Mm-hmm. To keep the population home, we have to be able to address their basic needs. They have to be comfortable that they can access the services that they need, that they can live their livelihoods. Because if you don't, you know, then there will always be those who see that their lives are too difficult and too hard, therefore they have to migrate to where they can find, you know, better opportunities and better comfort for them. So the answer is to help us to develop our economies, to create those conditions where our people do not want to leave and they'll stay at home.
I gather that you are left with about 30 months in order to end your second constitutionally allowable time.
Our constitution calls for October 2017 for national elections. We're headed there.
Interesting. How do you think, or what in fact do you wish, or would you like to be best remembered for?
I'll say it again. I hope I'll be remembered that I made a difference in the lives of the Liberian people, that when I met them, and when I leave them, their lives will be better off.
What is it like to be a president of Liberia?
Strong character, strong patience, strong commitment, a combination of all of those, and we think we're getting there. We think we're doing that.
When you sold to the presidency, surely you must have had a vision, the vision thing. What was your vision, and to what extent do you sincerely feel that you have been able to deliver on that so far?
The vision was to transform Liberia. When we took over, it was a devastated country, totally dysfunctional. To transform it, to get away from the old, you know, structural deficiencies and arrangements and institute new methods. We've been able to achieve some things, but it was more difficult than I anticipated, given the many years of conflict, given the trauma to which many of people given the deprivation to which they had suffered. And so the capacity to respond at the pace that we would have liked was just not there. Changing the attitudes of people who for a long time have resorted to extortion and violence to achieve their aims. But we've come a long way. And like I say, we haven't achieved everything that the country has the potential. But what we've achieved is absolutely, as recognized by everybody, astounding. You cannot rebuild a country so devastated over years of conflict in 10 years or 12 years. It takes decades to do it when everything's broken and you've got to fix everything. We're very pleased with the progress we've made, and we think Liberian people and the world are recognizing that, and will recognize it even more when our administration ends.
There, a lot of your colleagues, when it is about time to end their terms, basically what they do is do what some characterize as engaging in constitutional political, the shifting of political constitutional goalposts. Is that something that you could even remotely think about?
Our Constitution forbids it. Our people won't allow it. And I don't want it. So the answer is no.
What do you intend?
No idea in that direction.
What do you intend to do after the presidency?
Oh, goodness, the world's my territory, yeah.
Well, you, of course, you are even a Nobel Peace Laureate.
First of all, maybe I'm into farming anyway.
I see.
I'll just go sit on the farm.
Very interesting.
I'm growing oil palm, so I'll be able to make palm oil and sell it to you.
I like that.
You are tuned into a special edition of Straight Talk Africa. We'll pause for a short break, and when we return, we'll have more of my interview with Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Dr. Darius Mans, the President of Africare. Just a reminder that we appreciate all of your social media feedback. Please keep them coming. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, the challenges African migrants face. Xenophobia in South Africa, and hundreds fear dead and drowned when their boat capsizes off Sicily. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa. If you liked today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back. If you have just joined us, we are continuing with the last part of our exclusive interview with Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Dr. Darius Mans, the President of Africare, as part of our special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Let me come to you, Darius Mans. We were aunties today that you are honoring one of Africa's most accomplished public servants, Dr. Donald Kaberuka, the president of the African Development Bank. Why are you honoring him?
Donald Kaberuka, I think, has been a transformational leader. But I think he's also helped to change the narrative on Africa, about Africa's place in the world and its seat at the table. And it's for those reasons we believe he should be honored as he leaves office.
What about his role in helping to combat Ebola?
The African Development Bank, I know, has in all three countries stepped up to help respond to Ebola. We, in fact, Africare has been doing some work with them in the case of Liberia, but also looking at it at a regional level, recognizing that in addition to these country plans, you have to be sure that it's being addressed at the regional level, because as we all know, Ebola does not need a passport. It jumps across borders. So to be able to address it forcefully, get to zero, stay at zero, and to rebuild, a regional response is needed too.
Let me come to you again, President Sirleaf. You talked earlier how, of course, you've been able to empower women. How specifically have you been able to do that? Because there are a lot of other countries that have had female heads of state or prime ministers. I can talk about Pakistan, where you had Benazir Bhutto and what have you. And yet, you still have a Malala coming out of Pakistan. Malala, of course, you know her because she's now one of your colleagues, having won the recent Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, what we've done when it comes to professional women, I mean, we've just opened a political space so that more and more of them aspire and participate in political life. But perhaps more importantly, we've empowered rural women, you know, women farmers, women marketeers. And we've done that by giving them better working conditions. We've done that by giving employment opportunities through vocational training to those who are younger. And I think more importantly, we've given them a voice. And so today when I go around into the rural areas and meet women, they are so proud when they say, you know, before you, we could not sit in a meeting. The men wouldn't allow us to be a part of decision and discussion, but today they can't stop us because we talk and they know that, you know, if you're president, that we have a right to speak. So I think we've done a lot to empower them. And today the Rural Women Association and the Liberia Marketing Association, headed by a woman, all our women organizations are very strong forces in our society.
You won a Nobel Peace Prize. To what extent has that also really added some clout to you, added some sort of, you know, made perhaps your stature even more visible? And to what extent have you been able to take advantage of that so as to mobilize resources globally in order to help your country?
No, clearly it's a great honor to win a Nobel Peace Prize, but I haven't used that as a marketing tool. I haven't had the need to do that. Mm-hmm. And so the stature that it brings enables you to, you know, to reach out in any area of endeavor and to have a commanding voice, you know, and also to have to be an inspiration to many other people who would like to have a path that leads them to similar honor. But I haven't used that prize to say go out and mobilize resources. I'm involved in so many other ways, mobilizing resources. That tool has not been used.
What about the manner in which some of the resources that you have mobilized have been used? Are you satisfied in the manner in which some of the resources have been used? Because there have been some reports which have been very critical about some of the monies meant to help Ebola, for example, victims and what have you, but some individuals take advantage of them, of the money.
You know, we do not have any strong evidence in that regard. First of all, Ebola money does not really come directly to countries, the bulk of it. The bulk of it goes to UN agencies, bilateral agencies, international and domestic NGOs. It's only that which comes to us from some of the multilateral institutions as budgetary support that goes into our budgetary system. And so it's accountable under our budget systems and procurement rules. And there may have been one or two cases where, in the intensity of the battle, people did not observe the process required by procurement rules in normal times. That's the only time that we know of any kind of concern. But our auditing process is still on. We're very confident that our own auditing commission will deal with that. We have external audit agencies that are being recruited to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we're committed to full accountability as of now. I feel that we don't have any great concern about any misallocation or misuse of resources. Now, not until all the audits are complete, because funds are given to different groups that ultimately have to do their expenditure reports and it has to be audited. What will come out of that, I don't know. But like I say, as of now, we feel okay about it.
What about you, Dr. Manns? As far as Africa is concerned, do you run into some of those issues sometimes on the ground?
Well, we have checks and balances, and as the president has said, in our financial management approach, ensuring that we do audits. We have internal auditors as well as an external audit to be sure that resources are being used for the purposes intended, that we're getting real value for money. Because I think that's extremely important in the execution of this recovery plan, which by providing support from the community level, the district level, the county level, the national level, will ensure that Ebola never again has the upper hand.
Final question, Madam President. I take it now that in as far as combating the epidemic, you are probably beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel?
Oh, definitely we see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're into the 28th day of zero cases, mm-hmm. 21 days after the one case that we had. Mm-hmm. And so we feel very, very confident that we're at the end of the tunnel. But this is a disease that we don't know. Its dimensions, its ability to recur is something that we still have to be mindful of. And that's why we all say until we do zero, until we remain at zero, we need to be vigilant. We need to keep up the precautionary measures. We need to work together, exchange information, and we need to build our health systems that have the resilience to respond.
If there was a young lady watching Straight Talk Africa and wanted to follow in your footsteps, really, wanted at the end of the day to be Madam President, do you have any specific message for that young lady? What does she need to do in order to become like you?
To study well. To determine her dream, to work on the path toward the achievement of that dream, to don't be deterred by the difficulties that she will face, and above all, get the education that makes you competent to achieve your objectives and to realize those dreams.
On that note, Madam President, thank you so much for agreeing to take off some time and grant us this opportunity to interact with you.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
We'll have to stop right there. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into this special edition of Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.